was the last time you heard yourself lament, "Oh, I'm getting so old"? I know this congregation, this first service is younger, but I tell you, much sooner than you think, you're going to be saying, "Oh, I'm getting so old." You know, age 40 is a dangerous, dangerous age for a man to enter. You are fast approaching the height, the pinnacle of your career when you're about 40. And yet the best of your strength, the best of your health is behind you. Where do you go from here? I want to read you a testimony from a pastor, a very successful pastor, a very popular writer, and he was a good man, he's a good leader of men, but this is what he wrote. He said, "My depression had grown all through the spring, summer, and fall. By October, it had reached giant proportions. I would often stare out the window or simply sit in a chair gazing into space. Several times I had gone for a long drive in the car or a bike ride or on a long walk. I had literally come to the bottom of me. I was ready to chuck everything. Repeatedly, I had fantasies of getting on a sailboat and sailing off to some unknown destination where no one knew me and where I carried no responsibility for anyone, anyone in my church or in my family. By mid-November, the depression had grown to unbelievable proportions. Since spring, my wife Sally, so you know it's not me that is writing this story, and I had been researching this book. I had hoped that by taking off November, I could spend a great deal of time on the final draft. But now I was ready to throw everything away. On a cold, wintry night, I went for a long walk and made some decisions. I would resign my pastorate of the church. I would write a letter to Fuller Seminary to tell them I was dropping my doctoral program. Again, this could not be me. I would write to my publishers to tell them I no longer would be writing. I would also legally turn everything over to Sally and take only our 1968 Cutlass. It's a Buick Cutlass, by the way. And start driving south. I'm not going to drive a Cutlass. I'm going to drive an RV. For me, it was all over. I had had it with people, with responsibility, with society, even with God, who had been such a close friend all of my adult life. But now he seemed to be so distant and remote, uninterested in the agony through which I was going through. I feel like a vending machine, the pastor continued. Someone pushes a button and out comes a sermon. Someone pushes another button, out comes a magazine article. The family pushes buttons and out comes some money and some dollars and time involvement. The community pushes other buttons and I show up for meetings, sign petitions and take stands. And he continued to say the male midlife crisis is for real. To many men, it seems that from 40 on, it's all downhill. They still have 25 to 30 good productive years left, and yet they're asking, where do I go from here? You're tired, you're depressed as you enter into these troubled waters of between 40 and 55. I know this congregation, this service right now, the average age may be approximately 39 and a half. I'm just guessing. Join a club. You're entering into dangerous waters. How do you get out of these dangerous waters? How do you get out of this dangerous rut? How do you steer through these dangerous times? Turn with me back to the 14th chapter of Joshua. And we will find God's message to us this morning. When God is saying to us, real men begins at the age of 40. And all those years before 40, they were just years of preparation. Preparation for the greatest blessings that are ahead. What God has to say to us this morning is this. Number one, real men see God's promises and blessings through fearful and depressing circumstances. And God is saying to us, number two, real men never lose sight of the promises and blessings through years of delay and denial. God is also saying to us, number three, that's okay if you miss this, it's okay. I just copy this for you. It's all hard copies. Real men never settle for anything less. Never settle for anything less than the full possession of God's promises and blessings. And I think finally, God has this message for us. Real men would follow the Lord wholeheartedly. Now we come to the 14th chapter of Joshua. We meet a real man. He's an old man by the name of Caleb. It's not the first time we encounter this name. The first time we see him is back in the 13th chapter of Numbers. I'll read to you, Numbers 13, verses 1 to 3. The Lord said to Moses, "Send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I'm giving to the Israelites. From each ancestral tribe, send out one of its leaders." So at the Lord's command, Moses sent them out from the desert of Paran. All of them were leaders of the Israelites. And then in verse 6, it tells us that from the tribe of Judah, Caleb, son of Jephunneh. Now we know that at this time when Moses sent him into Canaan to spy out the land, Caleb was 40 years of age. Now how do we know that? Because if you look at verse 7 in Joshua chapter 14, chapter 14, verse 7 says, "I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to explore the land, and I brought him back a report according to my convictions." Now here's a man, 40 years of age. He is approaching the height of his achievement. He's at the threshold of his greatest success. And he's ready to move in to take possession of the greatest blessings that he has from God's promises. But wham! Knocked down from the height of his success. Why? Not because of fault, not because of failures of his own, but because of the fault, because of the failures of 10 other men. You talk about a midlife crisis. It doesn't get worse than this. Now, where would Caleb go from there? At the age of 40, that's a time when the boys are separated from the men. Real men see God's promises and blessing through fearful circumstances. The Israelites had left Egypt about 18 months, close to 2 years, before the event in Numbers chapter 13. They had traveled across Sinai, and now they are standing at the door of the promised land. And all they had to do is just walk right in and take possessions. And that was at least 45 years ago, before chapter 14 of Joshua. Moses selected 12 men, one from each tribe of the Israelites. Those 12 men were to be pathfinders. God had already told them what they could expect. They could expect a land flowing with milk and honey. In other words, they could expect all those resources that are necessary to sustain them, and they're going to be plentiful. But God also told them about the oppositions that they can expect. The land of promise is occupied by powerful and hostile people. People who are not going to just give you the land. Formidable the obstacles were. Powerful and fearful the circumstances were. But yet God said, the land is still yours because the promise is secure in my words. There could be no doubt as to the outcome. The Lord their God will deliver the land over to all of them. And all they had to do was just go in and claim and just pick up the blessings and promises. And so Moses sent the 12 and go into the land. They were to be the paratroopers. They were going to be the pathfinders. And Numbers 13 tells us that they traveled from the south toward the north. And they were about halfway through. They arrived in the area near what is now Jerusalem. It was a mountainous place, a hilly country. We were talking about the hills of Judah earlier this morning. It was kind of a hilly terrain in a place specifically called Hebron. Now, Hebron is a place that has a great deal of meaning and significance to Israel. When God asked Abraham to leave Ur, Abraham traveled from Ur to Canaan, and Hebron was a place that God appeared to him. Hebron was a place that God gave him the promise. The land will be yours. Look as far as your eyes can see. Your people are going to be as numerous as the sand on the seashore and stars in the sky. A great nation will come from you. And it was at a place called Hebron that God gave him the promise. And it was in Hebron that Abraham, Sarah, and Isaac and Jacob lived. But after the patriarch passed on, the Israelites migrated into Egypt. Somebody else came in and occupied Hebron. Hebron area was occupied by people called Anakites. Anakites are like the sons of Anak. The Anakites were notorious. They were famous for, in a negative sense, they were notorious for the savagery. In the Bible, the Anakites were remembered by different names, names given to them by their neighbors. They were all terrible names. One group of neighbors called them Emim. Emim means terror, terrible ones, horrible ones. Another group of neighbors called them Rephaim. Rephaim means ghost, the shadow ones, people that are to be feared, to people that you tremble in their presence. The Hebrew people called them Nephilim. Nephilim means fallen ones. So these Anakites, they struck fear in the hearts of everybody around. So the 12 spies, they came back from the exploration and they reported to Moses, oh yes, the climate was wonderful. The land was good. The resources were great. And exactly as God promised, it was a land flowing with milk and honey. You know, it's like 1848, 1849. All this newspaper report says the streets of California were paved with gold. But then still, in spite of God's promise, fulfilling right before their eyes, they could not see the presence and they could not see the power of God because they could only focus on the fearsome circumstances. And they began to describe the terrible people. And the 13th chapter of Numbers described this great wave of terror sweeping over Israel. Even though God has promised them, people would not go in. All they had to do was just walk in. And yet they would not because they whimper and they whine like babies. But Caleb stood up. Caleb saw the same thing. Caleb saw those terrible giants. He has seen the same fearsome circumstances. And yet he stood up and this is what he said. Yes, the terror and fear are real. But the power of God is just as real. And the blessings and promise of God are just as real. We have seen God at work again and again. And all God is asking us to do is just go in and claim the land and follow the Lord in obedience. And the land is ours. Caleb stood up and said those words. We are strong. We are strong not because of our strength, but we are strong because God backing us up. Yes, the circumstances are fearful. Yes, we are smaller. Yes, we are weaker. Yes, we are shorter. But this battle is not fought with weapons. These battles are not fought and won by numbers. These battles are not fought and won by us because we are stronger. These battles are fought and won because it is the strength of God that is behind us. But yet the people were so afraid and they began picking up stones because they wanted to stone Caleb. Babies see fearful circumstances and whine. Real men see the blessings and promise of God through fearful circumstances. It is what you see when surrounded by fearful circumstances that differentiate a boy from a real man. Tests of manhood really begins at 40. Real man never loses sight of the promises and blessing of God, even though, even through years of delay, even though through years of denial. It is what you behave, it's how you behave in times of delay and denial that tells whether you are a real man or not. Rather than following the courage of Caleb, the Israelites were so afraid that they wanted to kill him. But instead, it is God who wants to kill the rest of the people. Because God in his anger, Numbers 14, confronted the people and proclaimed his judgment. God said to Moses, I'm going to destroy them all, and I'm going to raise up a new nation through you, Moses. What a great opportunity for Moses, right, to rise even higher to what he was. But Moses pleaded with God not to do that. Because Moses was zealous for the reputation of God. Moses pleaded with God not to do that, not to destroy the people, even though it meant such great honor and glory for himself. Moses pleaded with God not to do that because Moses was saying, what would the pagan nation think about you, God? You brought your people out of bondage, out of Egypt, but you were not able to complete the job. You let your people be destroyed. Don't do it for your own name's sake, for your own honor. And so God relented from destroying them right there and right then. But he did say, because of the disobedience, none of them will enter the land of promise. Instead, every one of the adults will die in their wilderness sojourn. And that is except two adults, two men, Caleb and Joshua. The only two men in the whole nations who could see the blessings and promise through fearful circumstances. So the rest of the people could not enjoy the blessings and promise for 38 years. Because when we say 40 years of wilderness, it means that from the beginning, when they left Egypt, it took about a year or two to be where they were. So for the rest of that 38 years, they wandered around the desert, and one by one, that unbelieving generation die off. And now we come back to the 14th chapter of Joshua. We pick up the narrative. This is 45 years later. The generation that refused to claim God's promise and blessing, that generation is gone and dead. But Caleb and Joshua were left. And within these 45 years, a great deal had transpired. 38 more years were wasted in the wilderness. And there were 7 years, at least 7 years of conquest. But Caleb never for a day, never for a moment, ever forgot what he saw those 40 years ago. He remembered the area of Hebron. He remembered this was an area meant to be a place of blessing and promise, and yet a blessing and promise long delayed and long denied. But he never lost sight of what he saw. Look at verse 10 and 11. 14th chapter of Joshua. Now then, just as the Lord promised, he has kept me alive for 45 years since the time he said this to Moses, while Israel moved about in the desert, so here I am today, 85 years old. I am still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I am just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was then. See, it was 45 years ago that Caleb first saw the area. And for 47 years, every step he took, 45 years, he can picture in his mind the land that was meant for him to possess. He can picture in his mind the blessings that was meant for him to enjoy. He never lost sight of it. He never lose heart for it. Now, I don't know what you were like 40 years ago. I don't know what you were like when you were 40. I remember what I was like when I was 40, and that was quite some time ago. And I was turned 40. Everything about me began to deteriorate. I deteriorate fast. I'm slow in everything. I'm slow in getting my driver's license. I had to take the test 2 times. I'm slow in my studies. The books that I should have read in high school, I should have read 4 or 5 years ago in junior high. The book I should have read in college, I should have read in high school. I'm always behind, but there's one thing about me that's ahead of everybody. There's a deterioration of this physical body. When I was 40, 39, I needed bifocal already. I began to lose my hearing. And now it's my memory. You ask me what I had for lunch yesterday. Again, never mind. I never remember. Real man never forgets promise, even though through years of denial and delay. Caleb never lost sight. He never forgot. The third thing I want to tell us is that real men never settle for anything less than the full possession of God's blessing. Look at verse 12 in chapter 14. Caleb said to Joshua, "Now give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day." This verse tells us a lot about what a real man is. Any lesser man would have been happy and satisfied with what he has got at this point. 5 years, 7 years have been spent conquering the land, and a lot have been accomplished. The Israelites have been very successful in their conquest. There were plenty of land for everyone. Caleb was 85 years old, and you and I would ask, now, what more does he want? I mean, for 85 years of his life, he had followed God. He had fought many good fights. He had trusted God in every way. I mean, he has given his best. He ought to be retired in a lake house somewhere. There's a lake in Promised Land. Yes, there's a lake in Galilee. He ought to be looking for a real estate agent to buy some property up north in Galilee. He ought to be thinking about big fish. He ought to be thinking about lemonade in the sun. Ordinary men like me have been dreaming about that ever since I was 40. The time, that was a long time ago. But not Caleb, because he wanted nothing less than the full possession of God's blessing. And not only that, anyone who knows anything about military tactic would know that the terrain in Hebron is most disadvantageous for any army on the offensive. The Bible tells us it was a mountainous area. Mountainous area is ideal for defense, for defensive action. There's a Chinese saying, one man guarding a mountain defensive position, one man guarding a pass can hold off 10,000 men. If there's any place Caleb should have left alone, it is the area of Hebron. Caleb should be satisfied with what he has gotten already. Hebron is the last place in the world that he should be fighting for, but not Caleb. Because real men don't settle for anything less than the full possession of God's promises and blessing. Verse 12, now give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day. I don't think Caleb was thinking about this for himself. 85 years. I mean, how many more years can he enjoy Hebron? He was 85. Yes, he may be still physically strong and healthy, but still his days were numbered. I think he was thinking about his children. I think he was thinking about his grandchildren. He was thinking about his descendants. He wanted the fullness of God's blessing and promise for his children and for the children of his children. Real men would do that. And finally, I think what God has said to us is that real men should follow the Lord wholeheartedly. Look at verse 8. Verse 8 said, "But my brothers who went up with me made the hearts of the people melt with fear. I, however, follow the Lord my God wholeheartedly." Look down in verse 9. "So on that day Moses swore to me, 'The land on which your feet have walked will be your inheritance and that of your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly.'" Look down in verse 14. "So Hebron has belonged to Caleb, son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, ever since, because he followed the Lord, the God of Israel, wholeheartedly." In a matter of a few verses, three times, it described Caleb as a man who followed the Lord wholeheartedly. You see, the world is full of distraction. Distractions that compete with our hearts. And I wonder what your hearts and my heart are full of. You see, we need to know a little bit about this guy, Caleb. You ever realize that he was not a Jew? He was not really a people belonging to God. He was not a chosen one. The Bible tells us that he was a Kenizzite. A Kenizzite was originally mentioned in Genesis chapter 15. A Kenizzite is among all the other Canaanites. He was a Gentile. He was an outsider. But he made his commitment to identify himself with the people of faith. He made a commitment to identify himself with the people of Israel. The Bible tells us that he was from the tribe of Judah, but he was not a Jew. It only means that he was a foreigner who attached himself to the tribe of Judah. You see, in the Exodus, there were a lot of foreigners in the midst of Israel. I was thinking, what an irony. It takes a foreigner, it takes a non-chosen people to demonstrate the greatest trust and faith in God. A faith and trust that outshine all other God's people. Caleb, by birth, had no right in the allotment of the land. And yet he claimed Hebron solely on the authority of God's word, solely on the promise of God. This tells us a great deal of how God deals with us. God deals with us individually as each one of us relate to him. We cannot claim family connection. We cannot claim, oh, my father was a deacon in the church, or my mother was a godly woman, and therefore God owes me his promise. We cannot claim that. We cannot claim the merit of our parents. Just like the John the Baptist rebuked the Pharisees on his day, because the Pharisees were claiming merit because they think they're Abraham's children, they're Abraham's descendant. And John the Baptist would say, God will raise up other children of faith that belongs to Abraham. Caleb knew that God of Israel can be his. And the promise of God can be his. The blessing of God can be his to enjoy if his heart is fully devoted to him. There is a special meaning of Hebron to Caleb. The word Hebron means fellowship, joining together. That's why the place is called Hebron, because God called Abraham and made a covenant with Abraham at that place. It is a place where God has always personally met people. Personally, Abraham met God face to face in the Hebron, and Abraham was called a friend of God. It means a place where God meets with us on a person-to-person basis. And Caleb wanted to possess the very place where God can also meet with him, face to face and person to person. And it's based on the personal commitment. If our personal goal of life would follow the Lord wholeheartedly, you see what a real man is. A real man sees God's blessings and promises through fearful circumstances. Real men never lose sight of God's promises and blessing through years of denial and delay. Real men never settle for anything less than full possession of God's promises. Real men devotes his heart wholly to the Lord, seeking him face to face. Next time you hear yourself complain to somebody else or think to yourself, oh, I'm getting so old, go back to the 14th chapter of Joshua. What God is saying to us, real man begins life at 40. You are never, ever too old. If an old man like Caleb, 85 years of age, can do that, so can all of us. Let's all stand together. We have a song that we'd like to respond to this message.